Meeting of the Zoning and Planning Committee of the Board of Aldermen. Today is Monday, November 25th, and it is 7:05 at our start time. With us, we have Karen Dean, our committee clerk, Alderman Yates from Ward 5, Alderman Lennon from Ward 1 and President of the Board, Alderman Danberg from Ward 6 and Vice Chair of the Committee, and myself, Marcia Johnson, Ward 2 and Chair of the Committee. We also have Dory Zalesnik, Commissioner of Health and Human Services.
Where's Candace Haynes?
Somewhere in the building. She's, I saw her car.
She made it. And Amanda Stout and...
Senior Planner.
Senior Planner, James Freeze, Chief Planner of all things. Right? Chief Planner, long-range planning. So the first item that we're going to, hopefully Alderman Baker and Alderman Swiston and Kalis will join us. They may have forgotten that we had an early start. Docket item 309-13, parens 4, Department Heads Havens and Zalesnik requesting amendments to the City of Newton Zoning Ordinance, Chapter 30, to create new zoning regulations allowing the use of land, structures, and buildings for registered marijuana dispensaries in certain business and mixed-use zoning districts within the city by special permit and to establish minimum standards and criteria for granting of the special permits. So, since we don't have Candace here, Dory is there, or James, or anybody?
I just want to note that there's two changes in the language since last we spoke. One is a recent one that was added by staff just today with regards to providing providing to the police department information with regard to all personnel associated with an RMD. So basically it's ensuring that our police department has contact and appropriate information
relative
to
three.
People involved with the operation of the RMD.
Oh, no, so it's the bottom of page 1.
Yeah, so it's the bottom of page 1. And then on page 3 is the highlighted text, and that's reflective of a comment that was raised at the last zoning and planning committee meeting. With regard to adding for the context map, that the specific measurements are in context. Otherwise, we've been up changes.
We've been joined by Alderman Swiston from Ward 3.
Question on the first of the changes. Why does it say contact information for all management staff rather than for all staff?
I think the notion was that I may have to defer to Marie to answer that question, but if my sense of it would be that management staff is less changeable, that management staff is who you want to contact. The police department is basically wants to have that information in the case there's an incident that they need to address with regard to the property. But contacting regular staff, I'm not sure is kind of what we're looking for. I think they want to be able to contact management staff.
It's not that they want to know if anybody's crooked.
No, that's already resolved by the state.
That's in the state's application process.
All right.
But that will check on everybody involved.
Okay.
I think the intention is more with regards to security.
Okay. Just a second question. Just a couple of introductions. We have Alderman Larry from Ward 1, Alderman Hesterhan from Ward 3, and Alderman Albright from Ward 2. Any other Alderman in the room? Okay, thank you.
I was just going to comment that in the memo that the planning department did under the Boston's medical marijuana regulatory framework, in which I read, you seem to have found that the process would be duplicative because of the Boston regulations are largely repetitive of the state regulations. Is that the case?
Yeah.
Okay, and so since we are going to have certain things taken care of, will be taken care of by the state, that would be redundant for us to do on the local level. Is there anything that you can think of that's not covered on the state level that we would want to address?
Not from a zoning perspective,
from a zoning perspective. Yeah.
Boston basically appears to be wanting to license facilities themselves, which is within the regulations to do. But in terms of covering something that the state has left uncovered by doing their own inspection and licensing process, there did not appear to be anything that they were doing other than licensing themselves. But they didn't seem to be asking for additional information.
So from a zoning standpoint, we're covered. And then anything else we can look at through...
Right, the other things you were going to look at through progress.
Yeah. So we've been joined by Alderman Baker from Ward 7.
And I'd add the specifics relative to a specific proposal on the table would be addressed via conditions on the special permit.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Can I add
Yes,
something?
Good.
Thank you. I'm sorry to be a little late here. I just want to indicate that part of the conversation that I've had with Ms. Lawler has been around what was in the Boston regulation that could be part of ours. We talked about a variety of things as well as some things in Dennis, and Ms. Lawler and I have got one amendment to propose that, and the scope of what I asked her about were things that would not cause us to re-advertise, because I didn't want to be in a position of having any changes in the ordinance to do that. But she has a copy, I think, for us. Of the language that she worked out, and that is a notification process to notify the police.
That's the bottom
of page one. And there are a couple of other things that we talked about that I think, and Ms. Lawler should be able to speak for herself on this, but there are two that I think are worth thinking about. One was whether we needed any advance notice about the hours of operation. Let me just explain that. Particular concern. If there's a facility that's open at a time that's out of phase with its neighbors, there is a potential obviousness of it, which you may not want to have patrons be going only to that. If there are other things going on in the neighborhood, that's fine, but if it looks like this is the only thing that's open at that hour, then it puts them in some level of visibility that they may not want to be in, and certainly as a security matter, it might be important to do that. I think it's fair to say that we talked that could be part of a special permit condition rather than as part of the ordinance itself. The other one that I think Boston has, which is interesting, which there's no parallel here, but the question is how to deal with this, and that's that Boston requires an annual community meeting where there is a presentation by the licensees about their operations and where it goes. The problem is that under our model, there's a special permit that's going to be granted to the applicant, which is limited to that applicant and can't be transferred. But it's not a renewable special permit. In the Boston model, there's a renewable license. So a community meeting offers an opportunity as part of the license renewal process to have some input from the community about things that may need further attention. The one precedent we have in our zoning that I think is worth at least talking about, I don't think it results in an amendment proposal to the actual ordinance, is that in some contexts we've had where a particular facility has had potential traffic impacts and parking, we've had a study that's been undertaken after the facility gets open, and then the possibility of further mitigation. But that, I think it's fair to say, is Marie here? Where is Marie?
She'll be here soon.
She didn't come
in.
That we're under the impression, and I would again ask the advice of the planning department, that this could be a condition of the special permit and didn't need to be in the ordinance up front. But where one of the aspects of this type of use has been explicitly that it's going to be basically a drive-to more than it is a walk-to operation, those impacts are not clear, and we don't really need to, we may not be able to assess them, notwithstanding a transportation analysis up front. So those were the elements that, after some conversation, resulted in only one potential proposed amendment, which I'm prepared to offer at an appropriate time in the conversation.
Okay.
Let me just comment on that. One other thing I want to mention. The license operation, as Alderman Danberg, I think, indicated, was held in the Program and Services Committee. I'm still not satisfied that they may not see some value in that independently, but that's a different question than what's before us now. So that I just don't want any potential applicants or their representatives who are here to assume that there may not be a license opportunity in Newton. Brookline, as I understood it from the commissioner, was looking at something, but I don't know where that's ultimately gone. We need some time to assess that, but in terms of fair, I don't think warning is probably the wrong word, but at least advice, I don't think any applicant should be under the impression that there might not be a license in Newton of some sort, independent of the zoning, or an ordinance independent of the zoning, but that remains to be seen. Okay, I just want to give that clarification.
Okay, thank you. Alderman Meeks?
Could I have the clerk read the applicants who were successful, who did submit by the 21st, from Newton and from Norfolk and Suffolk counties? So how many are there to be?
There are two in Newton.
Right.
Two in Newton.
And how many are there from?
From Middlesex?
Well.
Or from where?
I think from Norfolk. I mean,
Worcester, there's six.
We're basically.
The two applicants, I have the information on the two. Oh, she's got it. I've got the information from the Secretary of State.
None in Needham, none in Wellesley, none in Waltham, and none in Brookline.
I can check.
Two in Brookline.
Two in Brookline.
Two in Brookline. Okay.
Okay. Okay.
Only one in Cambridge.
One in Cambridge. Can we just...
Shocking.
All right, are you done?
Okay. Yes.
So on this recommended change at the bottom of page one, are there any comments, questions, concerns? Alderman Lennon?
I'm all set.
You're all set. Alderman Danvers?
No.
Okay. And the other change is...
Do you need a vote, or is that okay?
Yeah, well, we'll just move the whole thing if there's no...
Okay.
Number four on page three about the context map, which we have discussed many times. Anything? Yes. Sorry, Gloria.
Yeah, one thing about the community meeting idea.
Mm-hmm.
The state is actually renewing the license for these facilities yearly. They are planning to conduct inspections. And there's also several pages of laid out instructions for complaints that can be filed with the state, as well as if the dispensary is under obligation, if there are signs of a broken or something wrong with their inventory that they have to keep very careful records of. They have a certain period of time that they're supposed to notify the local police, that they're supposed to notify the state. They have to make a corrective action plan. So there's a fair amount of ability for a community, if there are problems with the facility, to report those problems, and the state sets out a path for taking action. And they can go so far as to remove the license if they think there's anything wrong with the way the facility is operating.
Okay, thank you. So we've been joined by Marie Lawler, Assistant City Solicitor. We talked about the, Alderman Baker introduced the amendment change, Marie, at the bottom of page one, and I think people seem to be fine. So Alderman Yates said you had a question about whether it be management or just staff.
And you're James answered both.
Okay. Okay, all right. So, yes.
On number four, the context map, as compared to number two below under F, the context map should depict all the properties and uses within a 1,000-foot radius of the proposed site. And under number two below, a school, daycare, preschool, et cetera, can be located, has to be located outside of 500 square feet. Is that correct? Mm-hmm. You have to show what's within 1,000, but the restriction is 500.
Okay. All right. Any more questions, comments, or concerns, or are we ready to take a vote?
I move approval of the draft as amended with the two additions tonight and distributed by the planning department.
Okay. There's a motion on the table, the floor, to approve. Any further discussion, comments, or questions? Seeing none, all those in favor? Alderman Lennon, Danberg, Johnson, Baker, Swiston, and Yates. Good, we did it. Thank you, okay. Committee.
You
thank you.
You got that too much into the weed.
You just have to take potluck here.
God, you guys are on a roll. So I'll need a vacation. So just for process, Alderman Yates, just so I can explain, for those of you who are here, not of interest of this wonderful committee and its members, but because of this item, this will go before the full board on Monday. There is no opportunity for public input. There may, maybe floor discussion or whatever, but you're free to come, obviously. But there is, it's not a public input.
And they can submit written.
Absolutely. Call your aldermen, send them emails, exactly. So I don't know what the. Do you expect pretty much everybody there, Alderman and President Lennon?
Monday night, yeah. Actually, I think Alderman Kalis is out of town.
Oh, that's right. He's in.
Yeah.
He's
the Alderman Tangelo.
Yeah, Alderman Tangelo.
I wouldn't need a board photo for like 6 months.
Well, you could have just had little stick figures.
So I think I remember who's saying it, but other than that, I don't recall that anyone.
Okay,
else
so pretty much a full.
Amy.
Won't be back.
And Alderman Fishman.
Yeah, Alderman
Fishman
won't be here.
You
think he'll be there either?
No. Okay. Well, so let's just. All right. Well, I think with unanimous approval from this committee will help. So, please stay if you would like. Our next item is 407-13, His Honor the Mayor requesting discussion relative to establishing a regional technology center in Newton under the state's Economic Development Incentive Program. Mm-hmm.
No, they just need to. Well, that just shows you the relative importance of things.
Your committee, here's some non-medical chocolate.
Oh,
wow. Right before Thanksgiving. We need this like a moose needs a hammer.
Here.
But I'll have one.
Don't take it away.
But don't you dare take it away.
Hey, it's dark chocolate. It's, you know,
it's good for you, right? Are you trying to say it's
good for you? Look, if you have a choice, it's dark. Jay, when you present this, are you going to clarify what the property tax implications are? It wasn't clear to me on that. Okay. Alderman Laredo has communicated with me some concerns about this. Alderman Laredo has communicated some concerns.
Oh, okay.
Take a pit stop.
Alderman Yates, would you pass the chocolate down to the chair so she can.
Oh, thank you. You don't hold the candle.
Hi, so good evening. So I'm here to present tonight our Newton's application to join the State Economic Development Incentive Program, the EDIP. As an economic development strategy, whenever we're looking at economic development initiatives, we first look to the comprehensive plan, which forms the basis for Newton's economic development strategy. And our comprehensive plan lays out an economic development program that is really based on the idea of flexible, moderate growth. The idea that's kind of embodied within the plan, and it recognizes the competing values in the city between the kind of maintaining the residential quality of the city and recognizing the need for some amount of new growth and new tax revenue. More specifically, the comprehensive plan alludes to the idea of providing incentives to businesses that match the city of Newton in terms of complementing our highly educated workforce, complementing our location within the region, really at the center of the region, and complementing kind of in scale and character businesses that come in and are kind of appropriate to Newton's environment. And so that really forms the baseline of what we're trying to accomplish in this application to join the EDIP program. So I want to start with some acronyms, which is kind of helpful. These are also on the last page of your memo. Massachusetts Office of Business Development, a state agency that's basically focused on bringing new businesses into the state, and we work with them on the economic development side. We refer to them as MOBD.
MOBD?
Yes. MOBD. They prefer MOBD. And then one of their boards is the EACC, the Economic Business Coordinating Council, a key committee in this case because they would approve our application ultimately and would approve all related applications under the EDIP program. And then I'll talk more about the rest of these, but Economic Target Area, ETA, and a subset of that is the Regional Technology Center, RTC, Economic Opportunity Areas, EOA, and then the last one is TIF, the only one we pronounce rather than just saying the letters, because it sounds cute, I think. TIF, TIF, is Tax Increment Financing. So again, we're going to focus on these, the ETA-RTC combination, the EOA, and the TIF. So economic target areas, regional technology centers. ETAs are designated by the municipality and the state together for the purpose of fostering job creation to stimulate business growth. Basically, these create areas where the opportunity to offer tax incentives at the local level become available under ETA. Typically, the ETAs are designated towards communities that show high levels of unemployment, poverty, and those sorts of things, traditional gateway cities. But then the subset of the ETA program, the RTC, the Regional Technology Center, is targeted more at communities like Newton. It's targeted towards communities that have the potential to accommodate new technology companies, large areas of commercial or industrial space. You see here that there's a minimum of the program of 200 acres of aggregate, not all in one place, but aggregate. 30 million square feet of commercial industrial space, again, aggregate, not all in one space. Again, these kinds of high-quality technology jobs with location, space to accommodate them, match up with a high-quality workforce such as what Newton has. So some of the communities that also have RTC designations include Needham, our immediate neighbor, Lexington, Burlington, and a number of other communities along those lines. Again, the ETA is necessary in order to establish an EOA, which I'll get to next, and the TIF. And importantly, establishing an ETA does not commit the city to offering any sort of tax incentives. It simply makes the opportunity available to consider those. A perfect example of this is Waltham, for immediate north, who's had the ETA designation for more than 20 years and has never once offered a tax incentive. Economic opportunity areas. So this is kind of the next step in the process. Once you have an ETA, you identify economic opportunities areas. These are specific property or properties that with significant economic development potential where you would want to be able to offer some sort of incentive. They're subject to the EOA designation criteria, which are locally created, and I will get into those in a minute. They're approved by the Board of Aldermen. So you cannot designate an EOA without the approval of the Board of Aldermen. And ultimately the approval of the EACC as well, the state level commission, so it goes to the board of trustees there. We'll talk about that again in a minute. And then a property must be an EOA in order to be offered a TIF. So in order to get tax incentives, it must be an EOA first.
Can you say when you have a TIF, you have a disagreement?
What?
But that's two F's, I think. Yeah, then that's tough.
So what is a TIF in Massachusetts? For those of you who are familiar with the term TIF, everywhere else in the country it refers to something completely different. Only in Massachusetts does it refer to this. which is basically, it's a flexible program. It's a partnership between a company, a property owner, the state, and the city. Again, the Board of Aldermen would have to specifically approve the TIF agreement. They have to approve the EOA. They have to approve the TIF agreement. And it basically allows the city and the state to target incentives towards specific development projects that show significant growth potential. The company pays the full tax rate on the base value. Let's go into this in a little detail in a second. There's a partial exemption available for the increment between the base value and the future value of the property. It can range from 5 to 100% and range over the course of 5 to 20 years. So, hypothetical example. Without using numbers, we have a current assessed value on our hypothetical project that forms the base. There's a future assessed value, which is estimated at the time of the agreement, but at the end of the day, the actual agreement is based on whatever the actual increase in value is, which represents the increment. So in a real-world example, while we're trying to estimate what this is going to look like in the future, if the economy tanks and a project, you know, doesn't see the value that's anticipated at the time of the agreement, we're not on the hook for anything. And in fact, part of the agreement is that they're obligated to always pay the base, the taxes on the assessed base value. So even if the property value drops below that base value because of the agreement, they're obligated on that base value.
You want any questions as we go? Or
I'm going to offer an opportunity for questions in just one second. Let me give them just finish out this example. So in this example, here's where the flexibility comes in. You could do years 1 through 5. You could offer a 50% abatement on that just that increment. Then in years 6 through 10, you could drop that to 25%, and in the remaining years, you could drop to 2%. Or you could just do cut it off at the 50%, or you could do 2% for the entire 20 years. Flexibility built into the program. So I want to take a break here and see if there's any questions on just how that program functions before I go into the details of Newton's application.
Okay, Alderman Baker, then Alderman Yates.
James, and as you say, in other parts of the world, this is a tax increment financing is to finance public improvements.
Yes, it is.
So that if you have the increment that goes to put in an interchange so somebody can put up a new building at a superhighway, that pays for the public investment, in a sense, because it's, and we saw a little bit of that in the Chestnut Hill Square, because the city is in the back as the funder of last resort for the state, which is saying that there's going to be additional revenue coming in through the sales tax that's going to justify bonding all of that stuff that got built out there. In this context, this sounds like a limited exemption, not taking the revenue that is going to be generated and earmarking it for development. Is that correct?
Right, so a traditional TIF...
I mean, for public improvements, sorry.
Right, in the 49 other states, a TIF is used, that increment of tax value above and beyond the base is used to pay for infrastructure improvements. In this case, it's used to incentivize job creation and other things that you address within your criteria. So I will
understand, but it's okay, so... Let me ask, do we have access to a conventional, I mean non-Massachusetts version of a tax increment financing?
In Massachusetts, that's called DIFs.
DIFs, right. Okay. We can do those now without being part of this.
Yeah.
So the reason for having this particular kind of framework is that it gives you the ability to take some of the increment and award it back to the applicant who's building the project. Right?
Yeah.
Not take it and put it into the public sector somewhere.
You got it.
You're
getting it. That's absolutely right. I will say when we get into criteria, when you're negotiating these agreements, you look to that company to provide other public values beyond the jobs they're creating, and that's what we're going to talk about.
I understand, but I just need to understand what you're offering in return for something is being offered that would not otherwise be available in return for something yet to be decided and quantified, but I just want to understand the distinction between this and the other. Okay. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. The minimum square footage is, you have to have a minimum of 200 acres within the city, but the recommendation, it appears to be that the entire city allow itself to be included. There are 18 census tracts. In Newton, what is a census tract?
Well, it's just the unit that the state uses to kind of understand the geography of the city. It's just the application unit. But the census tract is when the U.S. Census is doing their population counts, they divide the whole country up into blocks, tracts, and then it goes to the municipal level from there on out, right? So Newton, by the U.S. government, by the census office, has divided the city of Newton up into 18 tracts.
Okay.
Just so for their ability to measure the population and track it over time within a given tract.
Okay, so this is so that we can speak on a federal level if we need to?
No, this is just the only reason is the state's using it as a convenient form of dividing the geography of the city up into space rather than trying to remove defined spaces. They're just using the census-derived spaces.
Okay. California Street was another, in the block, you haven't mentioned California Street, but you mentioned it somewhere else.
I'm not going to talk about our specific application.
Okay.
If you want me to just wait until I get to that point.
Fine. Okay. Yeah.
Sure. Go ahead. All right. Okay. Any other questions?
Yeah, I'm going to stop.
Do I recall correctly that an EOA, Economic Opportunity Area, would be one in the gateway cities and not us?
No. The EOA, so it's nested. Establish an ETI,
yes.
And then once, or an RTC in our case,
yes.
Sorry about all the acronyms, it's economic development, that's the way it works. So we establish an RTC, then we would establish an EOA on a specific property.
Can I ask, until we're used to the acronyms, can we say it out?
ECTRA.
Thank you.
The Regional Technology Center, if the city of Newton is designated as a regional technology center, we would then designate, with the board's approval, an economic opportunity area, which would be one or a group of properties together that we see as a targeted economic development opportunity in and of itself. So that would be project-based. So
now what's the ETA?
ETA and RTC are synonymous for our purposes.
Okay, then I'm getting confused because you made some reference to something that's in the gateway cities, but not for the rest of us.
So, the ETA is
economic
target area program was initially designed for the gateway cities. When the Regional Technology Center program was created, effectively as a subset of the economic target area program, in order to recognize the economic development potential in certain communities where there was large areas available for commercial and industrial development that would be suitable for high technology companies. Basically, 128 corridor is kind of the perfect example of that, and you can see that they designated these regional technology centers, all of them down the 128 corridor.
Yeah.
Lexington, Burlington, Needham, those are the three examples I know off the top of my head, because those are the ones I've looked at.
Was their development, which is the chicken, which is the egg? Mm-hmm. Did they designate areas that were already booming, or did the areas boom because they were designated?
I don't know, it's probably more synonymous, if anything.
Okay, let me ask one final bit of nomenclature. I remember the term from the state, the CARD, Commercial Area Revitalization Districts, and I know at least Petty Square, at the fall, was designated as one, and I'm wondering, have the CARD districts died bureaucratic death, or do they still exist somewhere?
I've never heard of it, so it could be that it died, or it could just be that...
He's not
heard of it. I've not heard of it.
Okay. Well, finally, are you going to show us, or can you provide to us some examples of the success of the RTCs?
Success of the RTCs. I suppose I could talk about some of them.
Thank you.
Yeah, the examples are things like Burlington and the fact that Cure is based in Burlington. They're based in Burlington in part because they were offered incentives by the town of Burlington. Right. So those are the types of success stories that the state refers to in these projects. Burlington's growth, the fact that Burlington has really kind of boomed as a target area for technology companies in the 128 area, I don't know if it can be entirely attributed to this. It's probably, with any economic development, it's always a whole collection of different programs and policies that are put into play.
I'm just wondering, the TripAdvisor strikes me as a bad example of incentives doing nothing except Needham and Newton in each other's pockets.
TripAdvisor is another example of a RTC offering an incentive to go over there. I think there's more to the TripAdvisor story than simply that. The fact of the matter is, TripAdvisor is a growing company. They're anticipating adding as many as 100 new people a year. And they had already expanded beyond the space that was available to them at the Gosse Point property on Newton Street. They were well beyond capacity and looking for space in other locations. They were very interested in a campus, and they were very interested in the idea of having a sign on Route 128. Within the time frame they were looking at, there weren't any properties in Newton that could accommodate both their growth needs and the location and campus environment that they were looking for.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah. We did meet with TripAdvisor.
Okay. Any other comments or questions? Okay.
So, most obviously, why designate an ETA / RTC, an economic target area / regional technology center in Newton? First off, we are working with Newton, with Needham. And the TripAdvisor is a great example of how they use that tool. TripAdvisor is going to become a centerpiece of their technology park. It's unfortunate for them that they weren't able to stay in Newton, but that's what they were aiming for. But as far as our continuing relationship and the continuing efforts that we're engaged in with Needham to develop and expand the N² Innovation Corridor project that we've been working on with them, we need kind of parity with Needham. They have the ability to offer these incentives and we don't. We also work a lot with the MOBD. MOBD will call us up and say, we have a company here.
What stands for?
I'm sorry. Massachusetts Office of Business Development. So I just live in this world.
I know.
They come to us and they say they have a company from New York, they have a company from overseas, and they're looking for locations, and they're talking with us about locations where that company could locate. And ultimately, part of that conversation is always about what tax incentives can the locality offer, and also what tax incentives can the state make available. And some of the state incentives that are available are only available where the locality has already made an offer of their own incentives. They look to match up. Where a locality is making an offer of incentives, the state then can follow on and make further incentive offers. So it's really about our ability to partner with these other communities, but also do so in a way that reflects Newton's economic development strategy. This is a map of all the ETAs and RTCs in the state. It represents more than 50% of the cities and towns in the state. Many of our neighbors, many of our neighboring communities, and many of these represent multiple communities that come together to form these ETAs and economic target areas and regional technology centers. The notion is that increasingly more and more of the communities within the state are picking up this designation and gaining the ability to consider offering tax incentives in the future. The state even talks about this program of, someday in the future being statewide. So here's our timeline. On October 25th, we submitted a pre-application MOBD to start to get their feedback on what Massachusetts Office of Business Development, to get their feedback on what on our application and what we were proposing. We got very, very positive responses. We were refining based on that application and other comments we received as we reach out to and talk with organizations like the EDC and others. And finally, we are submitting the final application this week in order to get it in before Thanksgiving for the December 18th meeting where they will review and make a final decision on the application. As we said, we're looking at the entire city. And our reason for that are multiple. The state is strongly encouraged just to look at the entire city, and when you look at the program across the whole state, there's only one community in the entire state that hasn't done the designation of the entire city, and that's Watertown, which just at the waterfront. They have their industrial commercial properties off their waterfront, so it doesn't make sense in that regard. We're also looking at the fact that the program does require this minimum of 3 census tracts. It requires the census tracts to be contiguous, and we sound very interested in including Northampton and Newton. Newton Corner. And the reason for that is that there's great activity, technology development going on the Watertown waterfront that we want to be able to consider and link to in the future. Along the Charles River, there's great stuff going on there. Mm-hmm. And there's a recognition that we have great properties in Northampton that would basically have great potential. given what's happening there. And then the other significant development going on is Harvard's expansion into Alston, particularly as they're talking about bringing their engineering school there and really bringing an innovation district, if you will, into Alston. Newton Corner and Momentum are also are both very well positioned to benefit from that activity. And so we want to open up that opportunity for the future. And of course, we're looking at Needham Street and the Wells Avenue business park
as
well.
Did you say you had to have three contiguous
census tracts? So you need to have three contiguous census tracts. So when we looked at three down there, which was our initial target area based on our partnerships with Needham, I realized that because of what's happening in the future in our neighboring communities and the great potential inherent up there, we want to be up there. We thought, well, we could gerrymander a little stake that goes across the city to connect them. Or we could just go citywide, which is what the state ultimately was recommending as our
best alternative. So, three is an alternative. I'm sorry.
Just when you pause this, because other people have wanted to chat for you.
Sorry.
Thank you.
So, the EOA criteria are really one of the key parts of this, because these are the criteria that the Board of Aldermen would be using in deciding whether to designate an economic opportunity area a specific project, a specific property, and the criteria ultimately that the state would also use in approving that. And ultimately, again, you need the economic opportunity area designation in order to be able to offer that tax increment financing incentive. So these are just summaries, but these are included in the packet on the fifth page of the memo in more detail. But the basic idea is, first and foremost, we want to support the growth of existing corporate companies. They're the ones that are already here, they've already made a commitment, and basically we want to return that favor, if you will, and make a commitment, and be able to make a commitment as well. But we also want to be able to attract these innovative technology-based companies to the 128 corridor, to our piece of the 128 corridor, to Newton, for the benefit of Newton, of course, but also the benefit of the region. So, we're really speaking to our recognition of the value of thinking regionally when it comes to economic development in that particular criteria item. We also want to think about job creation in the right places for Newton. So that's thinking about offering incentives for companies that locate in parts of Newton where there's the great potential for spillover benefits. That's the benefits of when you locate 400 new employees here, you've got 400 new employees shopping in neighboring businesses, visiting neighboring restaurants, and those types of things. So it's about basically what we call the multiplier effect, ensuring we get the greatest possible multiplier effect from the incentives that we offer. And also making sure that these projects fit into the locations in which, you know, we're not going to offer incentives to projects that are out of scale with Newton. And that's what this criteria also speaks to. We also want to create permanent economic enhancements. And that's to say that we want to offer incentives to projects that include new infrastructure projects or the repositioning of underutilized properties that offer a permanent economic benefit. So this is not just about incentivizing job creation. This is about incentivizing improvements to property that have a permanent economic benefit to the city. Along similar lines, we want to look for projects that incentivize the reuse of vacant or obsolete commercial and industrial properties. We have those, and on Union Street, we have those in Atlanta. We want to focus on these brownfields properties, these properties that really see much greater potential. We also want to support what we're calling strategically valuable companies. These are the companies that fit into the economic milieu, if you will, of Newton. The ones that are about, that match with our high-quality workforce, our highly educated workforce, that match into the clusters of economic, the economic clusters that we have in Newton. Things like biotech, probably the most famous example of economic cluster that's very, very strong in the Boston community. And we want to recognize and incentivize those to complement our existing biotech presence here in Newton. And then finally, the seventh criteria relates to the state's sustainable development principles, which are also, of course, embodied within Newton's comprehensive plan. They speak to issues of smart growth locations, transit access, green design, all values and principles that are fully embodied within Newton's comprehensive plan. I've mentioned a number of times Needham in partnership with Needham. The goal that we'd really like to achieve is to form a RTC jointly with Needham so that both communities are knitted together, and the state is strongly encouraging that to happen. It looks like, given the deadlines that we're working with, that we'll be submitting a RTC application just for Newton at this time, but the state has made it very clear that at any time in the future, they'd be happy to see these two RTCs, these regional technology centers, merge together into one. This shows that Needham is, of course, also town-wide on their designation. I want to say it's important to note that while we would be together, working together to promote this regional technology center, the criteria are forever separate. So Needham would not be beholden to our criteria, we would not be beholden to Needham's criteria, and similarly, there's nothing about what Needham might do that would obligate Newton to do anything, and vice versa. So I wanted to talk a little bit about the timeline.
Can you stop right then before you go to the next?
Sure.
It's Alderman Baker and Alderman Yates both said.
So, James, let me understand. Does the board have any role in whether we apply at all, or is this the mayor's call?
The application is just from the mayor. It's purely an executive function.
I just want to say that while you were talking, I was just trying to do some fast research on this, and the challenge this poses is that basically, as opposed to every other project we've done in the city, where the taxes that are generated are made available to the city generally. What is being asked here is, in effect, a tax subsidy backwards to a specific use, which, in return for something. We haven't talked about the something except in general terms. But I just have to say that I really want to understand that, because I also want to understand why we designate the whole city. I understand the argument behind it, but the locations of these seem to me better served if they're going to occur in areas that are underserved rather than, you've got the Route 9 corridor where we just have Chestnut Hill Square and Chestnut Hill Shopping Center, which have all gone up without any of this. And so I have to tell you, while the mayor has the authority to make this application, I have some real reservations about whether we should be designating a whole city or setting up this where we're basically being told, as I hear it, that our only role is in the specific choice of a location for this, right, as opposed to the creation of the opportunity.
No, yes, this is exactly. There is no tax incentive can be offered without the Board of Aldermen's approval.
No, I understand that, but I mean the whole mechanism is being proposed by the mayor and is going to happen by without any input from us other than just being informed of it. Is that what I'm hearing now?
Well,
what
is
just
a
because I just want to say I'd like to get into a conversation about this in a little more detail, but I have the basic question is, should we be subsidizing a specific property user with tax revenue that they are generating when other people haven't? And I just want to mention that one of the concerns here is not just the residential to commercial subsidy, but the fact that the particular recipients of these property tax incentives generally are fairly large users, and they're whereas there are a lot of small users in the city who are still going to be paying the same commercial tax rate, which we just said the other night. So there is if you read the literature about it, there's a good deal of question about tax equity, even across and within the commercial sector, for this kind of arrangement. So I just want to put that out there, because we may still want to do this and may still be in the public interest, but it's not automatic.
Right, this program is about creating opportunity to have those conversations around specific projects, but the disparity between smaller and larger projects, absolutely valid. The criteria designed to ensure that projects are consistent with the city of Newton and our comprehensive plan, the criteria designed to ensure that we receive a permanent benefit from each project comes in.
Thanks, Alderman Yates and Dan Burton.
Two questions. One, on the relationship with Needham, that I understand what you said, that TripAdvisor was maxed out and there was no possibility of doing it anywhere within the city, and their view, I guess, planning's view, too.
I mean, if we could have done something.
Well, I'm just curious as to if we did go to a regional arrangement with them, how do we avoid a repetition of the situation of somebody leaving one of the communities and just going to a site in the next door one.
We're specifically putting within the criteria that our rule is focused on existing Newton-based companies, mm-hmm. and we focus on companies coming from out of state or out of country. We don't want Newton to be one of these poaching communities that, frankly, they're all around us. There's many communities that are using these tools to poach or attempting to. I hear about it all the time mm-hmm. in my work.
Mm-hmm. Would Needham put a similar criteria in theirs?
You know, we are, by building a closer relationship with Needham, we're trying to avoid that situation in the future. And this is part of that process. Can they amend their criteria? Yeah, it's worth an ask. It's worth an ask, but I don't think we've actually put that ask before them.
Okay, well, just, it is a little irksome that, we're going to be partners in all of this, except when it's to each of our separate advantages. As somebody who was born in Needham and lived my life in Newton,
are you saying that Needham coached him?
No, it was something more like getting rid of the detriments. But that's it for now.
Hey, Alderman Sanford?
I did want to emphasize that there are communities all around us right now that are actively engaged in poaching companies from other communities that are also all around us. It's very active. You hear about the ones that are successful. You don't hear about the ones that aren't.
TripAdvisor went to Needham because of the size of the place that it needed. But what did it gain by going there? What would it have gained?
What did it gain in terms of their tax incentive?
Yes. Did they give it?
Yeah, absolutely. They got a tax incentive. No question. Uh-huh. Amanda, do you know it off the top of your head?
I don't think that works. But they promised, they promised job retention mm-hmm. increase, and in exchange, that was one of the key things. Needham got their regional technology center approved in 2007. Mm-hmm. And then, at such time that they were ready to use it in 2012, they were in a position to negotiate a TIF based on that quantity of percentages of
years. Okay. It was worth more than $1 million in revenue, but
okay.
I don't know, Chris, if you have any.
That's right. We don't have to go into it in detail. I just wanted to help. What would be the advantages of joining Needham and disadvantages?
To be honest, there's not a huge difference. We're going to be, hopefully, accepted as an RTC on our own. The advantage is that we end up, hopefully, with a closer working relationship with them that allows us to work through issues like the TripAdvisor issue in the future. The state, again, is strongly encouraging this type of regional collaboration. They've been working closely with us on the N-Squared Innovation Corridor work. But at the end of the day, we have the designation. Needham has the designation. It's about Needham. It's the appearance, and it's the clear statement of an attempt to work together.
Okay.
It's a letter of support from the Needham Board of Selectmen mm-hmm. that says we're going to work together, and then it's all in the follow through on both sides to make something happen with them.
Regarding infrastructure, some of the criteria that they're looking for are smart growth, access to transit.
Those are our criteria.
What we'd like to. So why did you not include Newton Center in that? Because we're looking at doing a garage in Newton Center. We're going to need financing for that. There's access to transportation.
Well, that's why you go City Hall.
What's that, I'm sorry?
That's why you go citywide.
Well, I mean, if a project were to be proposed somewhere in Newton Center that made sense, that met the criteria of the comprehensive plan and offered all of the benefits we're looking for, I'm not sure we wouldn't consider it. Mm-hmm. But our sense in looking at the city is that where those opportunities lie, given the criteria we're looking at, we believe they lie in Needham Street, Wells Avenue, Northampton, and
Well, I think that Newton Center could really benefit from something like this if we work the program out right. I'm not sure that tax incentives are the way to go. Some articles that I've read regarding tax incentives that were given long-term in other states have been pretty bad for the cities and great for the companies.
There's definite challenges with the tax incentive program. There's no question. The literature is there's tons of literature on that topic. The advantage we do have is that we are, the TIF program, the way it's set up for now, is offers us some protections, because the tax incentive is only on that increment of increased value. Mm-hmm. And again, if the economy crashes, one of the things the agreement allows us is that even if the value of that property drops below its base value at the time the agreement is set, they owe the money on the base value. Mm-hmm.
So the difference between a TIF and a DIF really is in the fact that the DIF allows that increase to be used for financing.
In other words, you can TIF is strictly
finance you on that.
The TIF is strictly used, the tax increment financing, the TIF, is strictly for incentive for job growth, and then whatever other benefits we attach to it via the agreement and via our design criteria. The district improvement financing, which is what DIF stands for, is set up so that you designate a whole area with multiple properties within it and an infrastructure project that would benefit that entire district. Mm-hmm. And you build an infrastructure improvement with the intention of that increasing the value of all of those properties, mm-hmm. with the idea that the bond that you've issued to build that will be paid back based on the increased value of each of those properties. Okay. So each property increases by $100 and $100 in tax revenue, and $20 of that is carved out to pay back the bond you put out on the infrastructure.
Okay. It seems like this whole idea is right up the alley for our EDC.
Yeah.
Have you
been
working with the EDC on this?
We've worked with them to the extent that we've been able to, but we did meet with them last week and received some comments back that are reflected in the criteria.
Have you worked long-term with the EDC on this?
No, I can't say we've worked long-term on the EDC.
And the reason for that would be?
It's largely a timing issue, given our time frame and trying to get this project completed.
And how long have we been working on this?
We've been working on this since September.
Okay. All right. Good. Thank you.
Okay. Alderman Sisson, then Yates.
I'm actually good one.
Yeah, Alderman Yates.
Just on the thing about the multiplier effects, that you bring in 400 jobs, and theoretically that should lead to 400 more customers for nearby business. One of the things that I was very disappointed in when I went to the N Squared kickoff was a lot of the comments, apparently from people in, what are they calling it now, Needham Crossing, was, oh, well, we need open space, and we need funky places to go to, and all sorts of different restaurants. And I'm thinking, have you ever been to the other end of Needham Street? Have you ever walked the Charles River Pathway? Do you know anything beyond the parking lot to your office?
There's no question that part of this is an educational effort, and that's part of what the N Squared initiative will continue to do, is market this corridor and also help people, raise people's awareness of the amenities that are already there. That's really a central aspect of that initiative, making people aware of the amenities available in that corridor, which by doing so serves to
strengthen
people's commitment to staying there and attract companies going there.
But it just was conspicuous by its absence and what the comments were.
Just one thing before you move on, James. I think the other thing that would be a side benefit is I don't think communities work closely enough together. And I think at some point, every community can't be doing everything all by itself and be sustainable. So as we educate and work closer together, I think there's opportunities for collaboration where we all don't have to have every department and doing everything. So hopefully that would be something that would actually come out in better just coordination across borders.
I absolutely agree with that. And again, I can describe that strongly.
And following up on what Marcy just said, are there groups of communities that have banded together and done how large a community is there, for example, or how large a group of communities?
So some of them are quite large. This is one up here, the whole north central or northern Pioneer Valley one. When you go out west, they get larger and larger because mm-hmm. you're dealing with smaller and smaller communities that don't really have the capacity to do this on their own to begin with. The Cape is one by itself. They tend to get smaller as you get eastward.
And why is that?
Again, it's with those, all those, you know, you pull together 30, 50 small communities that in of themselves don't have much of a staff, and they're relying on the regional planning agency that basically does all this work for them and designates it all at once.
Are there any criteria in Needham, let's say, or Framingham, or Waltham that would not mesh well with what we would like to accomplish?
Well, frankly, Needham's criteria aren't as robust as ours. So we would prefer to hold ourselves to the standard that we've set rather than the standard that Needham has set.
And you can do that? It's
yes.
Still standard.
Yes. You can join together the criteria and that's entirely separate. The partnership is strictly in terms of working together, but you're not subject to each other's rules.
Is it possible to get the criteria for the sectors around us, like Watertown, Waltham?
Yeah.
Needham?
Yeah.
Okay. Great. Thank you. All set on questions? I can go to the next segment? Great.
Yep. All this is basically, if a company, the process for one of these incentives works basically like this. A company approaches Newton, they've got a development project, they've got a piece of property and saying, we want to redevelop this property with X amount of space and bring in X amount of jobs. Newton's first step is to consult our criteria and basically make a consideration, are we going to consider this site as an EOA, an economic opportunity area? The city, the company, and the state would be in the process of negotiation based on those criteria to reach some level of agreement as to what sort of incentive would be offered and what kind of other ancillary benefits the city would be looking for as part of that agreement. And then that package would come to the Board of Aldermen for a vote. The board would be voting at that time on both the designation of the economic opportunity area as well as the tax increment finance agreement. Presuming that vote went forward, it then goes to the state, to the economic, no, I'm not going to be able to do it, EACC, sorry. It goes to the EACC at that point for final approval. And again, they also look at our designation criteria when they make their decision. And they're also looking at overall state stuff. And then to reemphasize the point, once a TIF is designated, other state events with taxing incentives become available to that project.
Can you give us a list of those afterwards?
We can provide a list of those. The two that I remember off the top of my head is one is a per job, it's a straight up per job income tax setup, and the other one is for brownfields remediation.
You said we had some brownfields here.
We do, apparently. I don't know the details of any of them.
Okay.
Sorry, that was me.
It's almost an assumed thing in Massachusetts. But, yeah. And so, happy to take any questions or comments.
Yes, Alderman Baker.
James, I think you covered this a little bit, but in the details of, I think part of the challenge of these is to sort of figure out how you compare it to what. I mean, at the time you make, if you may designate the whole city, which I have real misgivings about, and someone comes in and says, okay, I want to do this, or if you don't let me do this, I'm going to take my business elsewhere, which is the kind of race to the bottom that unfortunately we've seen states engage in for economic development for a number of years. And we haven't seen it on the local level. And I'm a little concerned that among all the communities I can think of, Newton is in a better position because of the demography of the city and the degree of public investment we've already made in education to not necessarily play in the sandbox. And I'm interested to see what kind of projects have achieved this in return for what alleged benefits, because I think that I would be very cautious personally for voting for this. I'm open to persuasion, but I don't want to be in a situation where someone comes in and says, look, I've got a choice. I can go to Waltham, I can go to Needham, I can go to Wellesley, I can go to whatever all of these other, you end up with the whole state being a potential competitor And that puts tremendous pressure on the board to say yes to something which we might not otherwise be willing to do.
Those are absolutely true and absolutely excellent points that have made this a difficult decision to consider this process because we recognize those problems. We also recognize that race to the bottom is occurring right now in Massachusetts on a regular basis. Their communities are being put up against each other by companies all around us right now. It was just happening. Dunkin' Donuts there was another community that tried to steal Dunkin' Donuts out of Ken, and the only reason Dunkin' Donuts decided to stay in Ken is because Ken offered them a tax incentive. At least that's the story as it plays out. So it's happening right now. It's something that the question is, do we give ourselves the opportunity to participate and attempt to rise above that and negotiate sound deals that are good for Newton? Or we can make what plays we can without that incentive deal, and we do that. We do that every day, but this is just another tool in the toolbox that we are basically proposing we should have available to us in these situations. The education point is a very important one. Newton has a highly educated population, and we make incredible investments in that regard to ensure that we have the best possible people. But the fact of the matter is someone can locate in Waltham and have access to that same set of people. So it's not the deal closer that we'd like it to be. So again, we just look for what tools we can make available to ourselves.
I understand.
Yeah.
Okay, Alderman Swiston, then me.
I guess mine was more just to explore what Alderman Baker is concerned, because I mean, from this presentation, my understanding is all that's being proposed is to institute a framework and tool that the state has provided us, and it's either whether we opt into it or we don't, but it doesn't change the environment in which we're competing in. So by not putting this tool in our toolbox, I don't think we're in any better position. If a company is going to try to compete one community after the other, we're going to be at a disadvantage because we have one less tool than everybody else has. This is just giving us one more. Just because we have the tool doesn't mean that we have to use it. But the thing is if we don't have the tool, isn't going to change where we're at right now. If the companies and businesses are already going to pit one community after another, I would say it's putting us at a disadvantage not to have the same tools that everybody else has in order to compete.
It is a real issue, and it'll behoove the board and staff and the executive office to be very careful about the presentation of these and the analysis of the specific agreements to ensure, or whether to consider going into agreement at all to ensure that we're doing it because we have to.
We don't have to use it.
Waltham has this tool available, and they haven't used it, but they have the tool available to do so. Burlington has the tool available and has used it 3 times. Other communities use it a lot more frequently.
Come back if I put me on the list again,
James, I noticed, is this docketed in front of finance?
I would probably
that group of people should, because that's where a lot of the conversation around tax incentives and so forth. Yes. So I suggest that even though it would be after the mayor's submission of the application, they should be made aware.
Okay,
Alderman Yates?
As you brought up Waltham, I haven't used this, but as anybody who's traveled 128 through Waltham in the last several years, industrial office,
the
commercial sector is booming. So if they can do that, jam up the traffic already coming back to Newton. Without it, what's their secret?
Well, they're next to Newton in building hotels. They built 9 hotels during the time that we had the hotel tax.
Right. Yeah, that's true.
I can't speak to the specifics of their economic development strategy. I don't know what that is.
Okay.
Hate to lose the race at the bottom.
Yes.
Alderman Baker, and then I would like to move on to the next item.
What should we do about this?
Well, let me...
Well, okay. We'll talk about that, but I... if we can wrap up the conversation.
Let me just respond to Alderman Swiston's point, which is that we want to have a tool in our kit, even if we don't necessarily use it. My concern is that once you get this tool, there will be inexorable pressure to use it. And I have real misgivings about using it at all. And I'm not speaking only for myself. I'm speaking, I think, for some concerns raised to me by Alderman Laredo and asked me specifically to raise these issues because of concerns about the tax subsidy in effect that is being given to a specific user compared to the city as a whole and compared to other uses in the city. So there's sometimes when you may not want to give yourself the capacity to do something so that you don't have to be pressured to do it. And this is one of those cases where I have real misgivings about it. I just have to communicate those to you. The mayor's got to make his call on this. But it seems to me if he does do this, I think you ought to think seriously about whether the whole city, as opposed to the areas that are most important for redevelopment, in effect, because that's what we're talking about. And second, I do think that the burden of persuasion on any of these is going to have to be extremely high. And we've got to find some way to deal with the problem of someone saying, well, if you don't do it, I'll go to Wellesley. Frankly, if they go to Wellesley, they go to Wellesley. But I'm not in a position, I really have real misgivings about this model, and I just want to indicate that to you up front.
If you go to Wellesley, we're going to get the traffic going through up the falls.
All right. Any other comments, questions? I would like to suggest, James, and I forgot to introduce Candace Savings, Director of Planning and Development, and Maura Keith, our Assistant City Solicitor. Would it make sense to hold this so we could come back and find out, kind of, to track this?
How about refer it?
Well, we're going to do a referral. We'll talk about that at the end next week. So.
You're submitting tomorrow, James?
Wednesday.
Tomorrow afternoon or Wednesday.
Well, well, the 27th.
Yes.
Really no reason why we can't continue to keep you, you know.
Well, that's what I'm saying. If we hold this item, then we can, then it can just.
I'll move to hold if it rounds when the questions are finished.
Okay. Any more, Alderman Baker?
No.
Okay. Alderman Lennon, nothing from the Ward 1. Okay. All right. There's a motion to hold. Any further discussion? If not, all those in favor? Paul Yates, Wiston, Baker, Johnson, Danberg, and Lennon. Great. Thank you. Thank you very much, James. The next item, 128-13, Alderman Albright, Fuller, Crossley, and Laredo, requesting the creation of a comprehensive 10-year strategic plan for Newton's conservation lands, which would include a multi-year prioritized list of short-term and long-term projects with appropriate estimated budget. This plan would be finished in time to include high priority items in the FY15 budget, with any project exceeding $75,000 added to the capital improvement plan. So Alderman Albright, since I think you're the only one here, do you want to come and sit up at the table and talk about it? Yeah. Kind of what your vision.
Notice how she's putting you really far away from her.
It's a coincidence.
What's an open chair? I could have moved her right closer to you.
That's the case. We'll be coughing in that direction.
Yeah, that's
So, well, first I want to thank you for taking this up. So I did have a brief conversation with James and Jennifer the last week about the So James was interested in, and he said that standard procedure is to provide some background on the docket item and then go from there. So I was filling them in last week that over the years they've become more and more aware about the way that our conservation lands, which were highlighted by the adoption by my son of a rescue dog a little over a year ago. So we've been availing ourselves of conservation lands all over the state. And so last year at budget time, I think that is what sort of crystallized this idea to docket this item. There's a standard $25,000, I think it is, in the budget every year for conservation, whether they want it or not. That's what you get. And I remember Alderman Baker raised his hand and said that, you know, we need to give them some more. And I think we did a little bit more. But the thing is that we really don't know what the conservation lands need to be managed well, to be more useful to the citizens of Newton. As Alderman Yates pointed out, We have an open space plan now. I think you talked to Alderman Carlson this afternoon, or later this week anyway.
Left one for you too.
Oh yeah? I left my cell phone at work, so I don't know anything is going on there. We do have an open space plan, and I recently looked at it again, and I looked at it at the time of docketing this item at the point where it was. And it's a great list, it's a great inventory, it's a great list of projects. But it doesn't say who's going to do it, how's it going to get done, when's it going to get done, and how much is it going to cost. It's a very good inventory of projects, but it's not really an implementation plan. And, you know, we'd love to be able to say at the time of budget, yeah, look at those top three priority items. Why don't we make sure those items get funded? And we now have a new conservation planner. And Yanni's right. And, you know, I just think this is the time that we should ask for how she's doing and what means and method she's using to develop this her sort of plan of action. And could such a plan, a 10-year, 5-year, maybe 10 years too ambitious, but could an action plan be developed so that when the mayor is looking to develop his budget, that some real projects could come in? And sometimes they may not be expensive. I mean, I've noticed so many conservation lands have signage, you know, with arrows pointing you at it on the trails. And very few of our properties have that. You're sort of in there wandering around, but you're not sure where you're going. So it could be some real simple, small projects that all takes is, and I think Jennifer's talking about getting volunteers to help make some signs, and that's all it takes, but there could be some much larger projects. I noticed when I looked at the CIP, I'm not an expert on the CIP, but I looked for any of the projects that are in the plan that talk about acquisition. I don't think any of them are in the CIP. So, nothing in the open space plan is in the CIP as an acquisition. I didn't see any anyway. So,
you're talking about ones over 75,000, Susan?
Yeah, there's a whole section in the open space plan about acquisition. And I didn't see any of them in the CIP. Not even at the bottom of the list, they're just not on the list.
I think that's a defect in the people compiling.
Well, that could be, but that's, I'm just trying to raise these issues and see if we can get some more action with our conservation lands.
Okay. Alderman Swiston, then Baker.
I guess I just want to raise, it concerns me that we seem to mix the terms open space and conservation land, because in my mind those are two very different things. Open space to me is open land that is for people to use. I have always thought of conservation land as preserving that of nature, which in my opinion means minimizing the amount of human being interaction in there. We seem to use it interchangeably here. I don't know if that's become accepted, because if you're saying there's a lot of conservation land where they've got signs that tell you how to get there and they go around paving bike paths through there, to me that's so like opposite of what I've always been brought up that conservation is all about, that I'm not really sure. So now you're bringing up using conservation money. Just so some background, my mom worked for the federal government, and you know, she was to a certain extent very general in her engineering, and she was very, very careful about conservation land. In her mind, conservation land means you don't touch it. You limit human touching. That's the purpose of conservation land.
Yeah, I don't think that's the definition of conservation land.
I'm looking at this, and this is
the federal government that she worked for.
The federal Corps of Engineers.
Oh.
I mean, civil. She's a civil engineer. It just is, because I do think that we have a real issue with conservation land here in Newton, and we do seem to make it interchangeable with open space, and I think a lot of our wildlife issues has to do with the fact that we're tampering with our conservation land and not preserving them as conservation land, but treating them like as our own open space.
I do know enough to know, having been through enough Conservation Commission meetings, that conservation does not mean, designating something as conservation does not mean that nobody ever touches it again. That it can vary, passive recreation and conservation land is a very important concept. And it's discussed in the open space plan. And they're talking, they talk a lot about passive recreation and conservation lands.
I'm just very concerned about it, that's all. James, do you want to
talk? I was just going to say, in the way Newton has set aside conservation lands, from the perspective that conservation land is essentially a subset of open space, and that the conservation land is intended for the benefit of the residents of Newton, I'd say the primary beneficiary would be nature, habitat, wildlife, but that a secondary beneficiary is people to enjoy said nature, habitat, and wildlife, and so we seek in the management of these conservation areas to minimize human impacts to the greatest extent possible. So we wouldn't pave a bike path through, but we would certainly have a trail through. And really, it's for kind of a safety and convenience factor. It would increase some degree of signage in some of those conservation lands.
Yeah, so I would gear towards that. I really feel like we're swaying towards, it seems like residents become more primary than whatever. I do agree with it being secondary, as long as the focus is on preservation of nature. But when I hear about, you know, going in to interfere so that people can better, you know, enjoy the space, in my opinion, detriment of the animal, the animal and plants that are supposed to be there, then I'm here like you're kind of defeating the purpose.
Yeah, I mean, we try to strike a balance and recognize that there's benefits to people having an opportunity to go into conservation areas because it enhances awareness of environmental issues and kind of the value of these habitat spaces.
I agree. And I just, again, I bring it up simply because I feel like our tampering in, when we had the wildlife people come in and talk, you know, we're sitting here working, quote, thinking that we're preserving conservation, except we're having evidence in our city over and over again that we're clearly tampering with the wildlife's natural habitat because they're all coming into residential neighborhood, and it's because they have no place else to go.
Thank you. Alderman Baker, then Yates.
Well, I have some real reservations about this, and let me explain my concerns. The problem that conservation lands have had is that they haven't had enough money to maintain them against the just natural degradation of storm damage and everything else, so that there are some trails that are natural trails that you just can't get through safely because the trees fall down. And that kind of thing. And the money has been used basically for that. The concern I have about the way the item is framed, it sounds as if it's talking about capital investments of significant amounts. And that, there is one item in the CIP, I think it's been amended, is the project on Wildman Hill, the reservoir, but that's a recreation project. And there is a problem, I think, in assuming kind of a continuum that there's recreation and the conservation, and I think Alderman Swiston's talking about not really wilderness because we don't have wilderness in Newton, but we have certainly more passive recreation than active. And the question of the dogs is an interesting one because you could foresee some people saying, all right, let's take some of the conservation land and turn it into dog parks. That I'm not sure I would support because part of the reason for having the open space be the way it is that it is a place that you can go without necessarily having that problem. In the sense of people having some place of sanctuary and otherwise for passive recreation. So the issue here for me is that when we're talking about projects, we're beginning to talk about capital investment, which if I were to make a choice about where to spend capital investment, I'd spend it in the recreation areas rather than necessarily in the conservation area. Now, it doesn't mean that doesn't...
I think you didn't read the docket item carefully enough. It said if there was a project over $75,000, to consider adding it to the CIP, but it didn't focus on the CIP at all.
Well, it referred to that, and and that's a fair criticism of my reading. I just want to be clear that I think that the need of the conservation areas is for adequate maintenance of what we've got. But I'm cautious about looking at it as, for better or for worse, any kind of development opportunity. And I don't mean development in the sense of putting buildings up. I'm talking about the kind of investment that we need to put into our recreation facilities. And so that's why I'm a little cautious about the planning process if it involves capital investment as opposed to maintenance and upkeep. So
I don't know if it would be helpful, but independent of the docket item, I shared with Alderman Albright what our intentions are moving forward as far as management of the conservation areas when we spoke last week. First off, this is all centers on the hiring of Jennifer Steele, who's been fantastic and has done an amazing job since she's been here. September 3rd was her start date.
The chairman of the commission says he doesn't believe that she sleeps.
It could be true. She's done an amazing job in a very, very short period of time. Going back to the open space plan identifies as one of the action items developing management plans for all of our conservation areas. And that was one of the things we clearly had in mind when we hired Jennifer, because she spoke about her experience and capabilities with that regard. So that was one of the criteria we were looking at during the hiring process. And amongst everything that she's hit the ground running on, and she's hit the ground running on everything, she's hit the ground running on starting to look at the conservation areas. The very first step was just organizing files. The fact of the matter is our conservation area files are a mess. They're becoming cleaner, but they are a mess. They have tons of...
There's opportunities for conservation here.
Yeah. A lot of recycling. Part of it is getting a handle legally on what we have. What binding the deeds for all these properties, finding, and therefore finding if there's any deed restrictions, basically getting the basic information we need from a legal standpoint on each of these properties. Our next step will be to develop very short and easily implementable management plans for each of the conservation areas that speak to the unique conditions of that conservation area and what we would seek to do in those areas. So in many of those areas, it's very little. In some areas that are very large and have dense trail networks, we might look to include signs there so people don't get lost. But again, primarily it's about a focus on the natural, protecting and enhancing the habitat of each of those properties. She's also looking at developing basically a volunteer corps, if you will, that would basically be our eyes on the management areas. Because one of the tricks with managing these conservation areas is knowing when a tree has gone down, knowing when there's an issue that has to be addressed, and as little as she sleeps, probably she can't be in all of those places. So if the idea is to actually have stewards, volunteer stewards for each of our management areas that would basically have their eyes on it. Friends groups, similar along those lines. And we're looking at kind of what existing entities within the city would be good partners in that effort. And basically building a network that would interface with her to basically help us manage these properties. That's where we're going. We're still very, very beginnings of this.
James, let me understand it. My memory is that the conservation lands are committed to the Conservation Commission.
Yes.
For control. They're not an executive function as such. Is that correct?
Yes.
Okay. I mean, we're
doing this. We in terms
I just
of myself,
who the we
Jennifer,
is the we.
And the Conservation Commission.
Okay.
It's all three of those, Jennifer, myself, and the Conservation Commission.
I understand.
The Conservation Commission by itself has no funds if they wanted to do something. It has to come on an executive budget.
Well, no, actually, they have the 20. We also do have $25,000 that comes annually from
a golf course. And I hope that, frankly, the city and the budget planning is going to be looking at maintaining at least the $50,000, because whatever you do with the planning process, you've got to be able to take care of the stuff you've got. But I just want to be clear that it's when you said we, it's the Conservation Commission is the entity makes the decision, but it's supported by the staff, which is yourself and the new planner, which I appreciate very much. I just didn't know who we was, and when you were talking, apologies.
James, a couple of things. One, it would have been probably good for her to come here.
Actually, along those lines, what we talked about was her coming in one of the winter months.
Okay, that's great.
And presenting once we have more information, more flesh on the bones I've kind of given you.
But even just, you know, where this committee has, you know, purview, oversight, thank you, Alderman Yates, conservation. She's been here since September, and I think we're into almost to December, and so it would have been helpful. So given what Alderman Albright, Fuller, Crossley, and Laredo have requested, what is the planning department's response? I mean, is this something that would be I understand Alderman Baker's reservations, and I can appreciate those, but given what's been requested by this group of aldermen, kind of, what is the response, and kind of, is this something that you can and will do? Just one moment, please, Alderman.
I guess I'd say that we're not going to do a 10 or 15 year plan necessarily. I think we're looking at creating kind of very short specific plans for each one that are updated continuously, focusing on the issues of maintenance and gradual upgrade and working with this kind of volunteer base. I don't think we anticipate any projects that go over the 75,000, but I also want to say that we're very, very early in this. Jennifer has not been to all the conservation areas. We're still collecting.
Can't find them all.
We're still collecting the files and getting that stuff together. That's why we thought it was most appropriate for Jennifer to come back in January or February when we have all of that in place.
Okay. Just 1 minute, Alderman. Candace?
Yeah, I think, too, and James and I talked about this, and to be able to come up with some sort of a 10-year strategic plan for the next budget cycle would be premature because we just wouldn't have enough information to make it meaningful. But I think what James is describing is really kind of parallel to what, you know, Alderman Albright is really suggesting, is that we, you know, look proactively going forward to make sure all of the documents that we are guided by are in sync. So if, you know, as we go through the different conservation areas for, and Susan and I actually had this conversation about maintenance versus management. I mean, there's a real distinction there. We're not really thinking of simply just maintaining the status quo. To Alderman Baker's point, that $50,000 a year, which we hope to have going forward and increase if possible, we continue to be used for the basic maintenance to be able to get take care of the trees and keep the signing updated and so forth. But that we really look at enhancing our conservation areas in a way to make them more enjoyable to the public. And I think that's kind of in the core of our conversations generally with the conservation areas that we've looked at, is that finding that fine balance between making sure that they are amenities that remain undamaged and where they provide good habitat, but at the same time, so people can really enjoy them. So, you know, I don't think that we have any differences in terms of what you're suggesting. I think it might simply be about what the approach would be to creating that strategy. And I think a little better is that, you know, after Jennifer finally gets a chance to really see all of the areas and have a sense of the whole scope of what we did. And then the year following, by the time that we were getting ready to present them in the FY15 budget, you know, I think we'd be in a better place to be able to respond appropriately to your request.
So would it make sense, Alderman Albright, to hold this and then we can use this item to talk about it in the winter months?
I'd love it if you would do that and have Jennifer come back. I must say I was very heartened by my conversation with James.
That's good, because I've had many conversations with you about past.
So things seem like they're really going in a good direction.
Good, great. Alderman Yates, then Baker.
I have no problem with holding it for now, but I think we should go to something that's more focused on what we've just discussed, that maybe the resolution should be requesting that the Conservation Commission develop management and what was the other? Maintenance and whatever plans for the specific conservation areas, and maybe do a couple each year and then implement that afterwards. I think the problem that some of the previous speakers had was the 10-year framework and all of that. The open space plan that was submitted to the state, my understanding was that it was intended to give us, make us eligible. It's like an RTC, to make us eligible for specific plan programs that the state has in this area. So I think my understanding from also talking to James, where James got no work done talking to Alderman, was that they have tentatively approved it with some conditions, and I think that would be useful for us to see at some point, and then get it finally locked in, and then when there are appropriate things that come up. And as I look at the picture of Hemlock Boyce here, a couple of things do occur to me that pick up on what was previously said about preservation of conservation areas versus making them accessible. Downstream from here, along Quinbaquin Road, the Department of Conservation and Recreation spoke to the previous Conservation Commission staffer about doing trails down near the water's edge where it's the most interesting. And basically, they were shut down by the previous staffer who said, no, you'll be letting the invasives get in, like the invasives haven't got in, or you'll be disrupting the quality of the resource. So DCR backed off and basically did something that was closer to the roadway there than it was to the river, and there's been some subsequent pushback from, I won't say gorillas, I won't say spirits, but there are people who really appreciate that, and I'm sure many other of our resources, of trying to get it down as close to where you can actually see stuff that's more interesting than the things going by. On this recreation...
Excuse me, Alderman Yates, can we stick to the item, please? Because I know we have one more item, and I think people are getting tired as I look around the table.
Oh, I was tired to start with.
I know, but... so.
I think that's it for now.
Okay, great. Alderman Baker, thank you.
Thank you. Let me just, I will support the motion to hold, but let me just offer a clarification if I can. Candace, you talked about management, not just maintenance, and I think there's an important distinction that maybe needs to be made, because there are some areas which are more appropriate for the kind of partnership and activity. The Houghton Garden, for example, is one down off Suffolk Road, which we went through a fair amount of effort to restore and create, make it handicap accessible, do a bunch of things. And that is a small area, but because of the nature of the specific kind of conservation opportunity, was one where the public is certainly welcome and indeed part of the reason for doing it. On the other hand, on the other side, across the tracks, is the Webster Conservation Area, where you don't necessarily, and indeed the Conservation Commission and the Planning Department has been, I think, quite thoughtful about indicating some reservations about putting a walkway around Hammond Pond for precisely the reason that it's not an appropriate area for the kind of intensive improvement. So I hope that when you think about the management question, there's some recognition that there are very, very big differences between spaces and among them, even in the conservation zone, and not zone in the sense of zoning and planning, but you know what I mean. So that's all I just wanted to mention.
All right, thank you. Just before we close on this item, so I hear what you're saying, Alderman Yates, but I think what I'd like to do is bring Jennifer in and kind of see where they're at before we start kind of interfering, asking for this or that. Let's see what she's doing. So I think we can use Susan's item for that.
She was very impressive the other night.
Great. Move to hold. Okay, there's a motion to hold. Any further discussion? If not, seeing that, that's all we need. Swiston, Baker, Johnson, Danberg, and Leonard. Great, thank you. Our last, you're very welcome. Now you can go get better. Docket item 65-13, Alderman Yates, Fisherman Kalis, requesting that Chapter 30 be amended to require a special permit for major topographic changes.
Yes. This was generated by the concern at 295 Upland Road, where, to paraphrase what the inspection commissioner said, was the worst abomination he'd seen in his time in the city, that a new owner had acquired that house lot. Now, Upland is like 100 feet above Winchester Street down in Ward 8. And the new owner had demolished 90 trees there, presenting himself that he, of course, was going to live there for the required one-year time, and dumped 100,000 square feet of fill on there, terrifying the people in the vicinity that they were either going to be drowned or killed in an avalanche. One gentleman said, I can't send my kids out to play in my own yard. So Mr. Lojack also pointed out in his memorandum about this topic that he felt it had been a mistake to give up the 3-foot grade change, although perhaps in its permutation there, it did have defects, but that we needed something back to give us control of major topographic changes. I think the problem is getting a definition of that that would be appropriate, so you do catch stuff like that. So I would move a referral of this to the new board with the hope and expectation that planning and maybe engineering can give us some precise language that ISD and engineering could enforce.
Are you working with Mr. Lojack on this? Because I just want to make sure, because this was docketed at the beginning of the year.
Yes.
And so it's just kind of where are we at with moving it, because I'll be glad, we will be referring a bunch of items. I know Karen and James and so forth were reaching out to people, so we have a whole list next time. So I just want to make sure it's something that we're going to move on.
Yes, we will, yes.
Alderman Hesmahan, would you like to comment on this?
No.
Okay.
Oh my God, Teddy, you're sick.
Thinking about it, okay. I just got a perception you might want to, but since no, okay. So, James, Candace, any comment, thoughts? No? Okay, anyone? Comments, thoughts? Okay, do I hear a motion to hold?
No, I refer.
Well, we're going to refer a whole bunch, so...
Oh, why don't we do this one?
Okay, that's fine. So, this one to refer to the new board. All those in favor? All those opposed? All abstentions? Okay, great. All right. Do I see a motion to adjourn?
No, before you do, I just make a comment?
Sure.
I just want to say, I've really appreciated the quality of work the planning department has been putting out here in some of these memos. And James, I apologize, I didn't read the footnote where you distinguished DIF from TIF. I read the other stuff, but I didn't get down that far. So that's my failure, not yours. So I just want to say that.
I recognize that Amanda worked on that memo as well.
Well, it's not just this one. There have been a lot of thought gone in a lot of these. So.
Thank you very much. Motion to adjourn, did I hear? So, all those in favor?
Thank you.
Thank you. All right.